I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, your weekly Sex and the City podcast where we look at the iconic questions of Carrie Bradshaw and answer them for 2022, which we are now in. Although, of course, normal proceedings are still on hiatus as week by week we tackle the latest offerings from And Just Like That. This week you are listening to Juna Dawson and Dylan B. Jones as ever, and we're very excited because one of our best ever guests has rejoined us once again. It's friend of the podcast, Natasha Devon MB.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. I'm breaking in a new sports bra.
Great.
Dylan won't know the pain of this, but they are really hard, sports bras. They're really difficult.
Yeah, at the moment it is like my boob 0, bra 1, but that will change. It's an ongoing battle.
So the first battle is getting it over your head, because the idea, Dylan, a sports bra, the idea is it's to keep everything still,
okay,
while you bounce about.
So you don't hit yourself in the face.
Basically, yeah. And it can kind of hurt as well. If your boobs are flying everywhere, you can't properly exercise. So a sports bra is way more compressive, if that's a word, than a regular bra.
Okay.
And so getting them on and off is a genuine mission. And like, there are times when you've kind of got to contort your body. That they're not easy. So my heart goes out to you, Natasha. Where is this storyline in Sex and the City? That's what I want to know.
Well, the struggle is real.
Boobs, for one. Actually, not true. Charlotte has quite big boobs. So she knows. Actually, they all have big boobs now. Yeah, that's true. That's fair. They've all got bigger boobs as they've headed into middle age. And this week we've been watching And Just Like That, episode 6, which is called Diwali. Dylan, as ever, I see you have a pot before you. What's inside your pot?
I do. It's a goo. Well, it's in honor of Seema, it's a leopard print goo brownie pot.
Ooh. And what's inside the pot?
So we have Carrie finding a new apartment. And being unsure about it, but buying it anyway, which must be nice. Actually most of this episode kind of, which I wasn't mad at, kind of circles around Carrie, and then the other characters come in. So like most of Charlotte's role this episode is sort of a mediator between, like, she's helping Carrie go through her stuff, and then her and Miranda have like a little not tryst. That'd be a plot twist. another plot twist. Her and Miranda have some conflict at the picnic. Miranda is still kind of figuring things out. There's some major life things going on for Miranda still. Seema is celebrating Diwali and she takes along Carrie. And we get a great scene, especially considering our conversation a couple of weeks ago. We get some great just singular time with Naya and her storyline as well. So, yeah.
Okay. So, first of all, I need to say two things. One, the strange cooing noise you can hear is, once again, I've come back to the office. It's the pigeon. It's the dove from above. It's a sign from above, as Lady Gaga would say. when I record at the office, I'm afraid that the little booth, the little recording booth, is in the very rafters of the building. Whoever designed this didn't think it through. So yes, we are being joined by a second guest. We haven't just got Natasha Devon from LBC. We have the pigeon. So the pigeon is going to be with us. And second of all, and I'd be interested to know what you both think about this, I think I've figured out what's not working for me within Just Like That. It's the lack of voiceover.
Interesting.
Mm.
Because, like, you know how in the olden days, the each episode would have, like, this bizarre theme, like compassion or cheating or threesomes. And there would always be that voiceover to take the often very random plot lines and grasp them all together. Like, meanwhile, across town, Miranda was having a different kind of threesome. You know, so what you're left with And Just Like That is often these different threads. So Miranda and Che, Charlotte and Rock, Carrie and her apartment, and nothing to stitch them together. So it can feel a bit like you're just kind of drifting a little bit from one scene to the next without much forward momentum. Now, this episode, it really stood out to me because it was the big plot was Carrie getting on with moving on, you know, and opening her boxes of Big's old shit and moving into a new apartment. And so the big headline is it's meant to be an episode about moving on, but there isn't enough exposition or dialogue or anything to really convey that this is something that is affecting all three or five women, if we include Seema and Naya as well. So I think that for me is what the problem is. I've been struggling to put my finger on what wasn't quite working for me. But with this episode, I think it clicked. What do you both think? Let's start with Natasha.
It's interesting that you say that, actually, Juno, because my big note from this episode is how meta it is. And I almost feel like there was voiceover without there being voiceover. There were times when I felt like Charlotte in particular in this episode was talking to the audience more than she was talking to the other characters. So, for example, when she says, why can't everything just stay the same? Or why can't people just stay the same? Or when they're having the conversation about how women aren't allowed to age. That to me felt like almost an anticipation of the reaction that the audience would have to And Just Like That. And it also felt to me like the characters going, and here are the themes of this episode, just in case you're struggling. Yeah, these are the things we're grappling with this week.
So I thought, I felt it was something I was going to say, and in fact put in my notes in episodes 1 and 2, but didn't get round to it, is we said like there was so much exposition in particularly in the first 20 minutes of episode 1. And I think that was Michael Patrick King struggling with the fact that he didn't have a voiceover. And that was the problem. It's interesting, though, that apart from that, I feel like it got past it a little bit. And I think it has got progressively better in many ways as it's gone on. I really loved this episode. What did you guys think?
I didn't love it as much as last week's episode.
Yeah. Mm.
But I loved it infinitely more than the episode before.
Yes.
So, well, maybe at the end of the series we'll rank the episodes. Yeah, an episode 4 was a low point. I'm with Natasha, right? I didn't love it as much as last week's, which I thought was quite wonderful, and I'm still seeing so many memes about Miranda and Che. Amazing. But this one, again, I just felt it rambled along, and you know, scenes where Carrie is talking to her dishwasher, it's a bit, and I just think it's frustrating because, and this is something you would have only known once you actually started filming, how much the voiceover could have saved them. And I wonder if there was, you know how, obviously, sorry, regular listeners, jumping ahead to season 6 for a minute. When Carrie goes to Paris to be with Alessandra Petrovsky and she doesn't take her laptop, and then she gets back to New York at the very end of season 6, She reopens her laptop and starts typing again. And we've always realised, oh, so her column is the voiceover, kind of. And I wonder if Big's death, you know, is part of her grief, part of the way she dealt with her grief was to start writing again. And so there would have been an in-world reason for Carrie's voiceover to come back.
Or it could have...
Even if we didn't have it in episode one, it could have come back in episode two, where after the funeral, she opens her laptop and for the first time in years feels the urge to write. And that's something I do, you know, I, as a writer, you know, I work through a lot of my therapy through writing. And so I it bugs me, I think, because there was an in-world way that we could have quite organically brought Carrie's voiceover back as a vehicle for her to deal with her grief. And then we wouldn't have needed, like Natasha said, some quite overt dialogue. Mm.
I found the scene really strange. It's a blink and you'll miss it scene where Carrie's sitting with a knitted blanket over her knees, reading a magazine in her apartment, looking very content. And then she says something like, this is not normal. And
this isn't healthy. This isn't healthy. I think she says, this isn't healthy.
There you go. And if we'd had the voiceover, we wouldn't have needed that. But also I have a real issue with that scene generally, because I feel like for a show that for six seasons, and I know the world has changed since the original Sex and the City, but for six seasons really bought into that capitalistic, never be content with what you have. If you buy stuff, it's going to make you more fabulous and happy philosophy to suddenly have this main character saying, I'm content with what I have, and there's something wrong with that, inherently wrong with that, really bugged me. And I know that she kind of reneges on that by the end, but it bugged me at the time when I was watching it.
Mm. And do you know what? It harks back to that amazing line in episode six, spoilers, where she screams at Miranda in the street, that she says, I cannot be single for you. And that line, more than any other line in Sex and the City, I think was aimed at the audience, which was, you know, this character can't be single forever just because you like her more when she has these single girl adventures. And I think, again, the this isn't healthy line was aimed at the audience, which is, do you really want this 50-something woman living in the one-bedroom studio apartment she lived in when she was in her early 30s? So again, it felt a bit like that line was aimed at us, which leads us nicely into Carrie's new apartment.
It reminds me...
Horrible! And also, from a television point of view, very hard to film, because that's got to be a backdrop of the Hudson, because you couldn't actually rely on the weather to stay the same when you were filming. So you get a horrid modern apartment with a painted-on backdrop of New York.
It really makes me...
your dream apartment.
It's really sad that, like, Carrie has essentially... I mean, she's moved into a block of luxury flats, hasn't she? Which is like,
yes, she has.
Which is like really sad and really uncharacteristic of Carrie. But it made me think of like, obviously we all make our decisions and we all have our different preferences about our living situations. And I'm sorry, Natasha, if you live in a very modern flat, I'm about to insult you. But I would say
we're staring into Natasha's flat right now.
It doesn't look like it.
It doesn't look like
it. No, I live in a Victorian conversion, so you're in safe ground.
Yes. But when if a friend, and this happened recently, a friend moved into a new flat and invited me over to look around it and like gave me the tour, as people do when they move into a new flat. And it was one of those brand new, like, box new builds, and I just didn't know what to say. I was like, there is nothing about this that I like.
Is that what you opened with?
No, I think I said something like, I mean, much like Carrie's flat, I was like, oh, it lets the light in really well or something. That was all I could
say.
Gosh,
it's very modern. Oh, yeah. It's very modern. That can, when, you know, that can be a compliment. Gosh, it's very modern.
I have to say, right, I have real world experience of this type of building, because my parents moved last year and they bought this house that, so my mum is very good with interior design. She used to work in the fashion industry when she was younger, and I think that she's kind of taken a lot of the skills that she had in terms of understanding what fabrics go together and things like that, and sort of transposed it onto soft furnishings. And she clearly walked into this building and went, I have a vision for this building, because now they've been living there for a while. It looks great. She's kind of broken up the space with room separators and rugs and things like that. But when they first bought this place, everybody was like, are you high? What are you doing? Because it had been designed by these people who they were really arty, and it's incredibly utilitarian. So they've got this tiny kitchen, no storage space. They had a microwave in the garage where they made all their food. So they didn't actually use the kitchen. And then one side of it is just a huge window. So one of the first things my parents did was they had to get some blinds, because they were like, we can't live in this. It's like a greenhouse.
A goldfish bowl.
Yeah.
And it was like some kind of art gallery slash museum. And apparently the estate agents had real issues selling it. And then my mum just fell in love with it. And then I think my dad just went along for the ride and it all turned out fine. But it's very similar in feel to where Carrie moves into.
And to be fair, Carrie in the end does realise this is not for me. And they sell it again, which, what a pain in the ass. And how, what?
Oh, also the fee.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Buying and selling houses, I can't speak for Americans, but in the UK, buying and selling a house costs a fucking fortune.
Right.
So, good. How nice for Caroline.
Caroline.
How nice for Caroline that she can afford it.
Caroline Bradshaw Nijinsky Preston. Seema, can we have a special mention? Well, I already gave her a special mention at the beginning. The leopard print outfit.
Mm.
Amazing.
As she says to Anthony.
Girl, yes. And also the styling throughout. For the first time in this episode, I loved pretty much all of the styling.
A massive shout out for Charlotte's Gucci cardigan at the end. Just chilling in her Gucci cardigan around the house.
I mean.
Oh, the money. I love a label. Who am I to talk? But,
I think you're right, Dylan. That's one of the notes that I made, that I really liked everyone's outfits, including, and this is unusual for me, including Charlotte's, because her style, the pussy bow blouses and the pencil skirts, and it is so far removed from anything that I would wear or admire, that normally whenever Charlotte appears on screen, I'm like, make it stop. But this week I actually did quite enjoy what she was wearing as well.
Yeah. I would say the only misstep was when they were at the picnic and Miranda's outfit merged with the tablecloth.
we'll come to the picnic. Yes. We need to do a whole moment by moment breakdown of the picnic, which is the best scene. We'll come to the picnic later. Let's stick with Caroline. I can't stop now.
Should we just call her Caroline from now on?
Yeah, she's Caroline. That's her government name. So she has, again, in this slightly bitty thing. So we also have two other plots. So she hits three plots this week. So we've got the flat, which reminded me of the long-lost episode of Friends, where Phoebe falls out with the smoke detector.
Yeah.
And she ends up smashing it with a hammer, and it comes back from the grave. Shout out to Lisa Kudrow. The second plot is the facelift.
Mm.
And the third plot is Seema and Diwali. Yeah. Now, can we do Seema and Diwali last? And Dylan knows why. Dylan knows why we have to come to Seema last. So let's talk about, I have a theory that if a TV show runs for long enough, Jonathan Groff will appear. It doesn't matter what the TV show is, even if it's an old TV show from like the 40s or 50s, if you watch it for long enough, Jonathan Groff will be in it. So yeah, like Night Follows Day, Anthony and Carrie, I have seen some shade online. I follow an amazing guy called Evan Roskatz, who is hilarious. Yeah. He's like a pop culture commentator who has lots to say about and just like that. He posted someone else's tweet saying, stop putting Carrie and Anthony in scenes together. They're not friends. What do we think about that? Are there obviously these are scenes which were written for Stanford, presumably. Mm. And now Anthony is in Carrie's life.
Do you know, I both agree and disagree with that, because it does take a suspension of disbelief to think suddenly these two are bezzy mates. However, I really like the relationship between Anthony and Carrie because I think Carrie has a tendency to take herself quite seriously and be really in her head about things, which I'm not judging because it's something I'm very prone to myself, and overthinking. And I love the fact that Anthony is so like, oh, get over yourself. She needs that sometimes. I think we all need a friend like that in our lives to just take the piss. And I enjoy that dynamic on screen.
I think I agree, Natasha. I think like big, and also like big points to Mario Cantone. I've been really enjoying him this season. And I think his spiciness works really well against like some of the quite serious themes of it. He's a bit of a relief, isn't he?
Yeah. And I think I'm going to say I quite like that he's quite gloriously un-PC as well, because this show is taking its political correctness very seriously. And so I quite like that he's on the edgier side. I wasn't sure about the Steven Tyler facelift line, but which I could have lived without. But I'm not mad at it. And also, hello, as we get older, we get new friends.
Yeah.
And actually, obviously, the way they've explained Stanford's absence, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, we are mad at it. But it kind of figures that both of these people have lost someone they really love. Granted, in the show, they've lost him to Japan and TikTok. But, you know, they maybe Stanford's departure has bonded them. So yeah. I
love that he doesn't let her get away with stuff. Like when she answers the phone and she says, I thought you were a phone solicitor, which I assume in America means like a cold call. Mm. And anyone normally in that situation would just go, ah, but he goes, well, why'd you pick up the phone then? And I love that about him, where he's like, no, I'm going to call you out on everything you say.
And Anthony, he's been in her life now since 2001. If they first met at that fashion show when Carrie falls over on the runway, he has been in her life for 20 years. Snarky people of Twitter, I'm allowing it. There.
Yeah.
The Queen has spoken.
I was going to say, it occurred to me that the last time Natasha was on, there was a plastic surgery storyline in the episode.
Yes.
And now here we are again discussing plastic surgery. Oh my gosh. In a much more in a much more evolved way. I thought the way they dealt with it was pretty good. In the show.
I found the plastic surgeon a bit neggy. He was doing that thing, I'm going to compliment you, but then I'm going to pull that rug from under you. Also, it struck me as so ironic that the last Saturday on my LBC show, 7 till 9 Saturday evenings, we were talking about, there's a story in the news about she's a plus size model, but she's not plus size in the real world. She just is by fashion industry standards, who was wearing a fat suit to model plus size brands on TikTok. And the reason that she said she was being asked to do this was because what brands want is a plus size body, but with a very slender face and neck. And
wow.
It struck me as so ironic that young people, it's all about the slender face and neck, you know, they're frantically contouring themselves to give the appearance of a hollowed out face. And yet you get to Carrie's age and you're branded a hollower and you have to have injectables to plump your face back out again. That's the ultimate irony.
Yeah, and I wish... So my wish for this plotline is that we'd had a whole episode about it. It's weird to me that we've had this sort of sandwiched in alongside other threads around Rock and Diwali and buying houses, because when you are a woman, or indeed a human in the world, cosmetic interventions have become attainable to mere mortals in a way that in the 1980s things like a facelift would have been available to only the very, very richest people in the world, whereas now, you know, there are even non-surgical facelifts that you can have, and for a couple of hundred quid you can have Botox, for a couple of hundred quid you can have dermal fillers. So these are things which, while they're not cheap, they are available, and if you're willing to travel to Bulgaria or Turkey, you can get them even cheaper. So this is a conversation that I think a show like Sex and the City should be having. I know, yes, we did it with Samantha previously when she gets all the lines drawn all over her. But when clearly, let's not name which two out of three I'm referring to, but two out of three of the main cast have, I think, been indulging in some cosmetic interventions. I'm glad they're having that conversation, and I wish we'd been able to spend more time in it. I did think it was hilarious that they literally used a picture of Sarah Jessica Parker. Like, I think, and I'm pretty sure it was like a season two publicity still.
I've seen that. And on, I've seen that on doing the rounds on social media, that the screenshot of that. Also, there's a you just mentioned certain members of the cast, and we've had this discussion on the podcast before. Mm. People have brought up Kristen Davis. It's interesting. I felt like they kind of acknowledge that in the picnic scene when she says Botox and a little filler are not the end of the world. And she's also changed her tune, Charlotte, because last time we had you on, Natasha, when Samantha was having plastic surgery way back in season one, Charlotte was like, oh, how can women possibly do this to their bodies? And now, 20 years later, she's like, oh, I don't know, it's fine.
But isn't that a journey that so many women go on when they're young? Right. They think, how could anybody possibly pay someone to inject poison into their face? And then they start to feel the pressure. And I thought actually it was really well done, because it did convey the extent to which women in particular, although not exclusively, cannot win. If you're naturally beautiful, everybody assumes that you're stupid. If you're ugly, then you or perceived ugly, then you're invisible. And if you spend money in order to attain the beauty paradigm, then you're ridiculed. Those are your options.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's impossible. And I wish this episode had been about that. I wish that had been the episode about the ways that women cannot win when it comes to your outward appearance. If you know, yeah, you're right. Those are your three choices. It's, you know, kind of, and these women are very much at that period of their lives. And it's weird because, you know, we've touched on the conversation around Miranda and dyeing her hair. In part two, we are definitely going to come to the wigs. I'm getting a lot of messages in my DMs about Cynthia Nixon's wig situation. Oh. We'll figure it out. I wasn't mad at the plastic surgery plot. I just wish, because we said that when we had Stella Creasy on, we said there is an opportunity here to talk about this, and they haven't. Mm. And Charlotte saying there's nothing wrong with a bit of fillers and Botox isn't her saying, you know, this was a present to myself. You know, I could afford it and this is what I wanted. And I think I look really banging is what I would have liked. Not this kind of halfway quasi-admission, which is, again, why I'm so upfront about the fact I've had Botox and fillers, because I don't want people to think that I'm fucking picture of Dorian Gray in my attic. the reason I look the way I do is because, you know, I paid for it. And also, prevention is better than cure. I'll throw that one out as well.
That's important, I guess, as well, isn't it? To be, not that everyone should have to be, like, it depends on how comfortable you feel with it. But it's important, I think, to be honest, rather than make people feel bad. I remember, like, last time, Natasha, you brought up Victoria Beckham, like, sort of saying, oh, I've never had plastic surgery. And when you're a public... Yeah. It's best to be like...
I think it's a morally good thing to do. Obviously, it's not an obligation, but I think it is good to be honest. But, you know, this is something that strikes me as somebody who has always had enormous lips. And the beauty paradigm shift. So when I was at school, it was not considered aspirational to have big lips. And I used to be teased. And when I raised my hand in class to ask a question, I would put my hand in front of my face because I was so self-conscious about them. Now I see a lot of chatter, particularly on social media, with people talking about how big lips look ridiculous and, you know, duck faces and it looks like a bimbo, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, can we not? First of all, because your face, your choice. But second of all, because my face has always looked like this, and I feel, and now I'm feeling attacked for the decisions that other people are making, if you see what I mean.
Mm. Again, you can't win.
Yeah.
You just can't win. So, it doesn't really it kind of doesn't matter what you do or don't do, because you are going to be ridiculed whichever way you turn. It is a double bind situation. And again, where was that conversation? That wasn't the conversation they had. Let's, before we go to break, let's talk about Carrie going to Diwali with Seema. Again, my worry with Naya and Seema is that they feel like they're not being brought in to the centre of the plot. So they're kind of like satellites who are attached. So they feel a bit separate. And obviously there was no LTW at all this week. So again, it kind of feels like they are slightly, they need to be embedded more securely. Otherwise they are just going to feel a bit bolted on, which is a danger. And then you have to fend off accusations of, have they just been brought into diversity boxes? So it's really important that those characters feel embedded. I think Che feels the most embedded. But perhaps that's because Che is involved with two of our main characters. So they just feel a bit like more like they've got their legs under the table. Seema is celebrating Diwali. A brief note. Now, this is really difficult because I cannot comment on this. The line about cultural appropriation versus cultural appreciation.
I've had that conversation actually because on World Mental Health Day, my friend Poppy Jaman, who is of Bangladeshi heritage, she invites people to wear a green sari. And I said to her, I would love to do that, but it feels a bit cultural appropriate-y. And she said, well, no, it's about who's inviting you to do it. And if you're invited, then it's cultural appreciation. So pretty much what Seema said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that I've had similar experiences with a couple of friends, like a Jewish wedding I went to. I wore a kippah, is it? The hat, the little hat. Mm-hmm. I think it's up to, I think it's completely up to them. If they say it's fine, then it's fine, I would think.
I think that's a really good rule for life, which is look to the culture you are appreciating and look for permission. I think that's a really good idea. Mm. And similarly, yes, previously when I attended a Hindu wedding, also I had mehndi done, because everybody had the mehndi done, so I would have looked bizarre if I hadn't.
I got a real, I don't know about you guys, but I got a Sex in the City tingle when Carrie stepped out of her front door in the Diwali outfit. I was like, this is great. I'm really enjoying this. I'm having a good time. And then them both smoking in the car in their saris. I thought that was a mood as well. Not that smoking.
Oh, do you know what?
Good,
it makes me feel sick because I get car sick, and I think the idea of somebody smoking in a car, it does something to my brain. Every time they're smoking in the car together, I'm like, whoop. Like,
yeah. At least the window is open, true, I guess. True.
Yeah.
Again, we're gradually getting to know Seema. She invites Carrie to Diwali because her parents are going to give her a hard time about the fact she's 53 and unmarried. But when I tell you I screamed, now I never forget a face. And as soon as we met Seema's father, I was like, it can't be. Can it?
What is it?
Like, is my brain being
racist?
I
didn't clock either, Natasha, but Juno picked it's astounding.
Seema's father is the Pakistani busboy who kisses Samantha in season 2.
No.
Yes, it is him.
Now, is it the same character though?
Well, interesting question.
An interesting question. So also, I mean, let's not forget the fact also Seema's mother is TV chef Madda Jaffrey.
I mean,
there's a name. Yeah. There's a name we haven't heard in a while. So what I've done is, if you will allow me, listeners, now, obviously, my day job is best-selling international author. I've written some fan fiction. And I thought, would you like to be my audience? And I'm going to read you a short passage from my new book, which is set in 1998.
Amazing. I love this so much.
Okay. I'm ready. I cannot comprehend why such a beautiful woman would be so sad. Even in her melancholy, she is radiant, reminiscent of the mannequin from the 1987 movie, Mannequin. I try to catch her eye. I am attentive with the breadsticks. I sense some fool, some rakish bastard has stood this siren up. How can this be? I offer yet more breadsticks. My heart aches as her heart breaks. When she retreats tearfully to the restroom, I fetch her curt. My shift is over. In this moment, I do not think of my wife, TV chef Madda Jeffrey, or my 30-year-old realtor daughter, Seema. My mind is surly occupied by this beauty. Fleetingly, I kiss her. Or rather, she allows me to kiss her, one assumes because I've been so attentive with the breadsticks. I tell her, if you take me home tonight, you won't be alone. Thank you. Thanks.
Amazing.
It took me ages. It took me a really long time.
That is why they pay you the big bucks, Juno.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So I've decided we are now in the expanded Sex and the City universe. And indeed, Seema's father is the same man who kissed
Samantha
all those years ago, leading Carrie to make a slightly racist remark about the whole thing.
You've just reminded me, actually, I saw a comment online. Somebody said that they hoped that the entire And Just Like That series was a novel that Berger had written about what he thought happened to Carrie after they broke up.
Can you imagine at the end it cuts to Berger in his computer and he's hitting like send on an email? Oh my god.
With hundreds of returned copies of Hurricane Pandora behind
it. I feel like I'm entering The Matrix Resurrections, starring Jonathan Groff as Agent Smith.
Oh, right. I'm going to say, let's all have a little break so our listeners can dry their eyes having listened to that beautifully moving performance reading. And then we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back. This week we are talking about And Just Like That, episode 6, Diwali, with our very special guest star, Natasha Devon. I'm not sure we have anything else we can possibly say about Carrie. So let's turn our attention to Miranda and Charlotte, and I guess Naya as well. And really, I think, and this is, I had lots and lots of, basically now my friends look upon me as the oracle of And Just Like That, which I suppose I've no one to blame but myself. And lots of messages about the picnic scene. It seems like the picnic was the reason to tune in this week. So let's break down this scene because, gosh, this picnic covers a lot of territory, starting with alcohol-free fizz.
I feel like Charlotte, because the first couple of episodes of And Just Like That, I thought, what has happened to Charlotte? It's like she's become a caricature of herself and she was really irritating me. And then I feel that she has three-dimensionalized, which is, I'm pretty sure not a verb, but I'm using it as one.
Throughout.
And the fact that she goes, delicious. It's such a Charlotte line. And she's being such a good friend. That was the moment where I went, oh, Charlotte's back.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad that last episode, Juno and I were skeptical and a bit worried about, because there was a 3-month jump from last episode. And it turns out wrongly, thought they might just come back and that Miranda's alcoholism was never spoken about again. Mm. I'm glad that they're still acknowledging it. And she, and also they're acknowledging the fact that, like, that they've clearly done a bit of research into, like, the nature of addiction, because now Miranda's fixated on something else to, like, substitute the alcoholism. She's addicted to masturbating, which is great. Like, I'm really glad that this is one of the things I loved last week and I love again this week. We've got sex again, like, which is really good. There wasn't any sex for like 4 weeks.
But also, I remember last week you talked about how she was likely to relapse, and the moment at near the end of the episode where she's doing some washing, and not to jump ahead and explore what happens in that scene, but at the beginning of that scene I did think, oh, she's gonna have a hidden bottle of something behind the fabric softener. This is when she's gonna relapse. I was expecting that.
Yeah, similar. I'm glad it's mentioned. I'm glad it's not totally forgotten. I hope we continue to mention it. I mean, the alcohol-free drinks thing, I noticed Guardian writer Marina O'Loughlin, who is their restaurant critic this week, talking about the Slate swindle, which is alcohol-free alcohols, and just like, she was critical of the markup, basically, which is you shouldn't be paying £20 for a bottle of non-alcoholic gin. I mean, let's be honest, it's flavoured tonic water, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
And I see her point on that regard, that is a scandalous markup. But yeah, we've got Carrie and Charlotte being supportive to different degrees. Carrie very quickly says she wishes this was real wine. It is real wine, Carrie. It's just non-alcoholic.
Although that's very Carrie, isn't it? To just like not just completely disregard the other person's feelings.
She is missing out on alcohol.
I also really loved, like you said, Natasha, like Charlotte's properly back this week. Like, I loved the unexpected moment when Miranda said she'd been fantasizing about Che, and Charlotte's like, oh, I see that. I get that.
Yeah.
And she had a sex dream about Che and they were on a ferry. I think they were on the Staten Island ferry, coming back from Staten Island.
But can I say, I have never felt the absence of Samantha Jones as much as I did during that picnic scene, because it would have been Samantha who, when Miranda said, with Che, it's the best I've ever felt, it would have been her who picked up that thread and said, let's talk about that. Let's explore this sexual experience, this really significant sexual experience that you've had. And I really felt that element of the conversation, it just felt like, judgy, you're having an affair. Carrie doesn't know if she's okay with it. And I thought, oh, I just wish Samantha was there.
That's so true, actually.
I felt it was, again, because it was such a long scene that had so much ground to cover, it felt like the tone changed very quickly after Miranda confessed that she'd slept with Che in Carrie's kitchen while Carrie pissed the bed. I'm still not over it, if I'm honest. We never will be. And so then all of a sudden it went from being quite a friendly scene to being quite aggy, and then Miranda storming off. And I was like, God, give me a minute. Let me breathe. Let me live. And just like that. And you're right. It was difficult, because Miranda even says, you know, to Charlotte, you're not allowed to have a big reaction. Well, you know, you've given her a really big piece of news there, which is you have, whether you like it or not, Miranda, you've cheated on your husband of 20 years with a non-binary person. So lots for people to process, you know, and, you know, Charlotte has questions. You can't expect people to not have questions, you know, and that's something I sometimes say to young LGBTQ people when they write to me, which is, well, you know, you can't, A, you need to be patient, and B, you can't expect people to not ask questions. And so I must admit, I did feel slightly sympathetic towards Charlotte in this, which is Miranda, this is a big thing. And I'm glad I liked Carrie going after Miranda when to break through the scene. So Miranda tells, so Carrie already knew. Miranda tells Charlotte about what happened with Che in the kitchen. Charlotte blows up and says it's a really big deal. Miranda gets in a huff and starts to walk off. But then Carrie goes back and tells her, we can't lose you as well because we've already lost Samantha. And that's enough for Miranda to return to the picnic bench and rejoin them. My best friend's husband messaged during their watching of this last night to tell me, if you look close enough, you can see a rat jumping over the bush.
Oh, wow.
I like to think it was probably a squirrel with a thin tail. But audience, let's all go back to this episode and see if we can see what my friend's husband saw, which is a rat jumping over the bush behind Miranda.
There were echoes in the picnic scene of a conversation that I had in my household, because the day before episode 5 aired, there was a spoiler in the Daily Mail. And I just want to say, the only reason I was on the Daily Mail website was I was preparing for my show.
Fine.
Charlotte reads the Daily Mail as well. So
yeah, which, I mean, that's not the episode we're talking about, but I have thoughts about that. But yeah, there was this headline and it said, spoiler alert, and then it said, Miranda has lesbian romp. And the word romp was, of course, capitalized. And I genuinely, for about 10 minutes, was trying to work out, is it a lesbian romp? Because obviously you can be a lesbian and non-binary, but Che is bisexual. So in what way is that a lesbian encounter? And then they have that conversation at the picnic where Charlotte says, so you're gay now, and Miranda goes, well, Che's non-binary. So anyway, yeah, I mean, we don't have to define it. I just thought I would share that I don't know if it's a lesbian
romp. Interesting.
Romp.
To the show's credit, that's the first time I've ever seen that dialogue on television as well. I just realised that.
I do not think the Daily Mail has any business calling it a lesbian romp. If Che does not identify as a lesbian and Miranda doesn't know whether or not she's lesbian, how can it possibly be a lesbian romp? A romp only exists between the two people who are in the romp. And if neither of them define themselves as lesbians, it is not a lesbian romp.
There you go.
I'm glad we've solved that one for the Daily Mail. very little Che this week. Natasha, a little dicky bird. You told me that you are rather fond of Che Diaz. Shall we all do our, hey, it's Che Diaz, which is the one that's doing the round. So many interspersed with scenes from the film Scream. So these are my two favourite things coming together. Drew Barrymore picking up the phone. Hello? Hey, it's Che Diaz. Amazing.
I enjoyed the dream montages in this most recent episode as well. Tell me you like it. Tell me not to stop. And Miranda's like, oh.
I mean, that sex scene was genuinely hot, to the extent that I felt like they almost had to break it up with Carrie trying to pee in a Snapple bottle to kind of diminish the pornographic nature of it. I mean, all of the new characters, I think I fancy them all a little bit. Naya, definitely. Seema, but Che in particular, fully, if they were real, and I know that there's an actor,
the animated character, the NFT, Che Diaz.
Yeah, but if Che was a real person, I'd be rethinking my marriage,
like Miranda.
Like Miranda.
Yeah.
Well, can we? Yeah. But where the fuck is Steve again? Where the fuck is poor Steve Brady? It's weird. Was he ill as well? Vulnerable or something? He's only been in 3 episodes. Two episodes.
There's something about Che that appeals to me as well. I think it's because, like we were saying last week, they're a bit of trouble. They're a bit of bad news, which I like. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Naya. Oh, also speaking of Naya, that her sex scene in this one was steamy as well. Was great.
Although we'll probably come to this, but I don't understand the conversation that she had with Andre after they have sex. I don't understand what she was
trying
to say.
Yeah, like you thinking about something that you'll go, and then we never got to find out what they were thinking about. or what she was thinking about.
I think I was playing with my phone during that scene, which is really damning, and that's partly on the maker's fault, I think I must have been checking Instagram or something. I don't know. I'll tell you exactly what I was doing. I was trying to confirm whether or not Seaman's father was the
That's exactly what I was trying to do. That's very important work.
God's work, yeah. But I must admit, and again, with Naya, it just feels like the storyline is so far away. Mm. Like, she had a fleeting moment with Miranda, something to do with building a women's shelter, and one assumes that's going somewhere as well. But yeah, and because we've done the IVF story with Charlotte, and because Dylan and I have done the IVF story really recently, because we've been following season 4, so it's kind of like, I'm not hugely engaged, and it's partly because it just feels really distant from what's happening with Miranda, Carrie and Charlotte.
But again, do you not think that the makers are trying to make a point with that? Because I've seen this, people saying, we've already had fertility storylines and do I want a baby or not storylines with Carrie, with Charlotte and with Miranda. But I almost feel like that's the makers going, yes, we are here again because this problem has not gone away. Yeah. And isn't it ridiculous that in 2021, we're still grappling with essentially the same dilemmas that we were back in the 90s. But Andre's best mate is the worst person.
I found it quite believable, that dialogue, and also hated him. Like when he was like, at the very end, when he was like, oh, a couple like you got to have kids. Like,
Just fuck off.
Yeah. which is probably what Naya should have said. Just fuck off. Yeah. Get your fucking opinions out of my
body. And Fertile Myrtle.
I did love Fertile Myrtle. Yeah, and she really is called Myrtle. Bless. I guess the only other person that we have to talk about is Charlotte and Rock. Rock gets their hair cut and sticks a big poster of the floral arrangement in their bedroom.
Yeah. Dolls. Yeah. I have thoughts about the dolls.
The creepy little dolls. Go on.
So I don't think anyone would have an issue. I mean, I might be completely wrong. This is my cis white male opinion. I can't imagine anyone having a major issue with dolls wearing different outfits. I can understand that it was through Lily. It was Lily who was saying it. So it might have been Lily kind of being a little bit over the top. But I mean, yeah. What do you guys think? I thought it was a bit of a dangerous line, because I feel like with lines like this, this is the sort of thing that makes people resist against all this quote unquote, again, ban the word woke, but resist against quote unquote woke stuff when they see stuff like this and they think, oh, that's fucking ridiculous, and then they go and vote for Trump. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think we're back again to that line that Charlotte says in this episode, which is, why can't people just stay the same? And I think she's not only speaking on behalf of a kind of very definite demographic, that kind of WASPy demographic in society, who think that they get married and have kids and that's their happy ending, and they just want to put a pin in that and for it to stay the same. But also I think she's talking for a whole section of America there, who are confused by the direction that society is taking. And I think you're right, Dylan, that there's therefore a responsibility, knowing that she's carrying the weight of that section of American society who will empathize with what she's going through. There's a responsibility then to make sure that the conversations that she's having don't venture into that territory of, you know, why are we talking about this?
Yeah. Mm. What do you think, Juno?
I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's, you know, what those dolls mean to people who have felt oppressed by those dolls, who have felt misrepresented. And Lily was the ideal person to speak on behalf of those dolls, because there will be all kinds of expectations of her because she's an Asian American girl, which Charlotte will never understand, even as a parent of an Asian girl. The dolls themselves are from the past. They are Charlotte's toys. And, you know, Charlotte can't travel back in time and erase those dolls from history, which is, you know, at the moment we're having very similar conversations about statues, we do not have time to get into fucking statues right now. But, you know, it's about what those mean and whether it's appropriate to display them. you know, maybe that Colston statue could have just been put in a museum, which is where it is now, you know. And like Charlotte putting the dolls back in their boxes, nobody's asking her to fucking burn her shit dolls. They're asking her, you know, her two kids are saying, we just don't want them prominently displayed in our bedroom because they're fucking possessed, for one thing. It's fucking Annabelle in the bedroom. Nobody wants that looking at them when they sleep.
But are they the same dolls? You know, there's an episode, and I don't know which series it's in, but Stanford has a relationship
with the doll man. The guy.
Yeah, it feels like it's the same dolls.
I'm loving this, and I think it's reinforced by Seema's dad as well. I'm loving this concept of everything being like completely connected in sex. Like everything is linked. Like never, you can never overanalyze anything too much.
But no, I think it's, you know, in the same way that, you know, shops are called out for having those dreadful racist dolls, which I won't name, you know, exactly the ones I'm talking about. You know, and there are still, I still sometimes pass by vintage shops or secondhand shops that are reselling them. And I'm like,
oh, is it like wooden ones holding trays, for example?
Well, things like that. The ones that you used to get on marmalade jars are the ones I was thinking of specifically. You know, why? They should be assigned to the past, which is possibly where they belong. Mm. And that's in the end what Charlotte does. You know, just put them in storage. Just put them in storage.
Do you think I'm going too deep? Or do you think that there's a ideological connection between Carrie and the facelift? No, I don't want to erase the past 15 years, actually. Mm-hmm. And if they show on my face, that's fine. And Charlotte putting the dolls in storage, this idea that you can erase the problematic elements of your past.
I can see that, like Juno, a phrase that Juno, that I've learned from Juno that I'm now fond of using, is first on the whiteboard. Maybe like the past, or maybe that was one of the first ideas on the whiteboard.
She'll tell you what would have helped. A voiceover. And with that, we shall draw this episode to a close. Natasha, you're one of my very, very favourite guests to have on. Such a pro. Always ready with the wisdom. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have a couple of listener messages, if we have time.
We love our listener messages. Of course we have time for listener messages.
Okay, so first we have Isabel.
Hi, Isabel.
Isabel says, love the podcast. I'm a junior doctor and listening to it on the drive home from long shifts gives me just the escapism I need right now. So thank you. She wants to share some thoughts re Miranda's alcoholism. She says, so she makes 5 points. She says in season, it's in keeping with her character because it's had criticisms from some viewers who say it's not. She says, point one, in season four, episode four, Miranda has a chocolate addiction when she eats the cake out of the bin. So she obviously has an addictive personality. Point two is, as an overachieving lawyer with long work hours, she has structure. So take that away and add COVID, and naturally she'd be reaching for a glass of wine. Point three is, Steve owns a bar, so she's always going to be around alcohol. And point five is, she's usually the one with the most control, but she's previously been challenged with an instant she can't control, which is Steve's cancer. So what happens when she can't control her mind or herself? And then she says, sorry for the essay and thanks again for the fab show.
No, we like the essay. Thanks for engaging.
Interesting.
You've just reminded me as well of one of my favourite episodes of So I Got to Thinking, which is where you had, sorry, I've forgotten his name, but you have a friend of yours who is a cishet guy who's never watched Sex and the City before. and he's talking about, he said, like, oh, I think Miranda, she eats a lot of cake and then she has a wank. Like, that was his summation of her story.
Oh my God, that was so... Just to get, like, an outside perspective on the random ridiculousness of Sex and the City was interesting, yeah. One more from Verity.
Hi, Verity.
Amazing fact I thought you guys would appreciate. The average age of the Golden Girls in their first series was 53 to 54. Average age of And Just Like That is currently 54 to 55. Thank Lord for retinol.
But I think they were playing up. I think that's the difference, isn't it? Our cast is playing down. Yes. The Golden Girls were playing up. Natasha, remind us, when is your LBC show on, please?
My LBC show is 7 till 9 p.m. every Saturday. affectionately referred to sometimes online as the woke hour. But no, really, it's just inclusive. We just have, lots of voices on there. Also, Juno, one author to another, I have a novel coming out in July. Wow. A YA novel, yes, called Toxic. So, look out for that.
You can pre-order now, please. Natasha's debut novel. We will see you next week, listeners, for And Just Like That, episode 7. Until then, do follow us at SIGTT Podcast, and we will speak to you later. Ta-ta for now. Bye.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.